On Sunday, August 25th, FilmStreams welcomes acclaimed actor Paul Giamatti for Feature 8, the latest fundraising gala in support of the nonprofit's mission programs. Joining him in conversation at the Holland Performing Arts Center will be FilmStreams board member Alexander Payne, reuniting the pair on the 15th anniversary of Sideways, their Oscar and other award-winning collaboration. And with us right now, live and local, is Paul Giamatti. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today. We really do appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You know, in introducing you, and I don't mean to embarrass you, but multiple Golden Globes, Emmy Awards, Screen Actors Guild Awards, Critics' Choice Awards, New York Film Critic Awards. In fact, if I continued, we wouldn't have any time for an interview. We would just go over your accolades and have to move on. So my first question is, did you have to reinforce your fireplace mantle?
I keep a lot of them in the closet because they are a little embarrassing. Now they're in the closet. I don't have a fireplace. I live in a weird little apartment in Brooklyn. I don't have a fireplace. I wish I did. I might put it out there if I had one.
Fair enough. Paul, how did you get into acting?
Oh, geez, that's a big question. I guess the easiest answer I can give is I always enjoyed doing it very much. Even as a very little kid, I always kind of, you know, you'd get the silly little school play where people played trees and flowers and bugs and stuff, and I liked doing that. I loved doing that, and I always loved it more than anything else. I didn't consider it an actual pursuit, like something I could actually do in my life, even though I have an older brother who became an actor. I sort of figured that was his gig, and I didn't really ever think of it. When I was in college, I did a lot of extracurricular theater, and I just loved it. And again, like, I was a terrible student. I didn't do any work because I was acting all the time. I got out of college, and I kept thinking, well, I have to do other things. And I moved out to Seattle to do other things and thought about an academic career. And again, I continued acting in little theaters where I made no money or anything. And I got an agent. A woman came and saw a play I was in, and she said, do you need an agent? And I thought, sure. I never considered doing it professionally. And I started making a meager living out there doing it. And I thought, well, if I'm actually making money doing this, this is what I'm going to do. So, I mean, it was always something subconsciously, I suppose, there was a drive toward doing it, if any of that makes sense.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. At what point did you know you were good at it?
That's yet to come, I think, that point. I mean, I think I've gotten better at it. I certainly felt like it was something I loved so much, I didn't think much about whether I was good or bad at it, in a funny way. I just loved doing it so much. I mean, I think probably maybe the past 10 years of my life as an actor, I feel like I have gotten a command over it that allows me to go, like, I'm good at this. I'm good at what I do. But it's taken me that long to get to this point where I think of it that way. If that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely. I think as an artist, always growing, always developing, right? I mean,
yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so.
When you were preparing for the role of John Adams, and everybody loved you in John Adams, you won an Emmy Award for it amongst many, many other awards. When you were preparing for that role, because it was a historical figure, did you prepare for that role any differently than you do for any other roles?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's certainly a lot of secondary material to read. There's lots to investigate about it. There's an enormous literature about all of those guys and about him and about the period. Obviously, you know, it's almost limitless how much stuff there is, which is daunting. You know, I knew I wanted to do some of that. I didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare for that. It's a funny thing when you play somebody real like that. I've done it several times, and there's definitely a pleasure and an advantage and to doing research, and it can be hugely helpful, and there were definitely things that were helpful in playing that part. It can become crippling, too, at a certain point, because you're playing a character. You're playing a character that exists in a script that is independent of anything to do with research. And so, to some extent, you have to play that character in that piece. And so at a certain point, I had to let go of doing too much research for that part.
Sure.
Also, I had a certain amount of freedom with him because nobody knew him very well. He was not iconic the way Jefferson was, Franklin is. Those guys, you know, people are arriving to watch something like that with a lot of expectations about what those guys are going to be like. And so that's a kind of, you know, you're playing George Washington and there's a bit more pressure than playing John Adams because nobody even knows what he looks like. Nobody has the same associations. So in some ways I had a greater amount of freedom to play around with him a little bit more or kind of follow my own instincts about
him. Sure. Whereas like when you played Bob Zmuda, was Bob still alive when you did that? So you were able to consult with him.
Bob was very much alive when I was doing that. And Bob, that's tricky when you're playing somebody alive who's probably going to be involved in the thing. That can get tricky in a whole other way because, you know, understandably, people like that are going to be concerned about how you're going to play them. And Bob's an amazing character and a wonderful guy and one of the great raconteurs of all time. But it got tricky sometimes with Bob because it was like, you know, he wanted certain things and he wanted to be seen a certain way sometimes. And that wasn't how it was going to happen, you know. But I did another movie with a gentleman named Harvey Pekar, a movie called American Splendor. And he was a comic book writer who wrote these very eccentric comic books about himself. He was alive when we did it. He was involved, but he was great because he had already sort of, he was familiar enough with kind of playing with himself as a character already in another venue in comic books that he was okay with us doing whatever we wanted to do with him. So that was actually easy. It's a case-by-case thing with somebody who's alive.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. A couple more things regarding Adams. When you did the research, was there anything that you found surprisingly human about him that you went, wow, really? That guy is just like...
I will tell you the most interesting thing that happened. I read some books about... I mean, I think another reason they did him as the central character, besides there just being that great biography of David McCullough, was in many ways he kind of was the least iconic and therefore most human of all of them. In a way, he wasn't a very kind of marble bust, postage stamp sort of president guy. He's not on the money or anything, because in a lot of ways he was a very neurotic, complicated person, and that was known even at the time. The most interesting piece of research I got that I found was when I arrived to begin doing makeup tests 2 weeks before we were going to shoot the show, one of the makeup guys, because it was useful for their makeup stuff, had found online, some academic had put together a list of every time Adams, in all of his correspondence, but mostly with his wife, had talked about a physical ailment he had.
Oh, be darned.
And he gave this to me, and it was this thick, and it was thousands of references, and I realized this man was a full-blown hypochondriac. And I was like, this guy, my eyes hurt, my teeth hurt, I have diarrhea, I can't sleep, my stomach hurts, my back hurts, my hair is falling out, like, constant. My teeth are falling out, I ate meat last night, and now I can't, I feel like I'm having a heart attack. I mean, it was just endless. And I thought, this is amazing. This is an incredible insight into this guy. Now, everybody was concerned about their health then, but he was off the charts about it. And there were lots of things where you thought to yourself, well, he clearly had migraines. He had terrible headaches all the time. He would take to his bed all the time in a kind of physical collapse that now we would ascribe to, like, depression and things like that, probably.
Sure.
And that's not to be reductive about him, but it was a definite insight into, my God, this guy was a hypochondriac and kind of a physical mess in a lot of ways. And that was really interesting.
Oh, and then, because my follow-up question to that was there anything that you found that did give that seed of heroicism, the legendariness, you know, and maybe it was just making it through the darn day, right?
I think he was just making it through the darn day. I mean, there was a definite, like I say, part of his appeal as a figure, it was his humanity, which is, he was a difficult guy. He was an argumentative guy. He was all these things. But the heroism of the guy is simply in getting through the day and also being like a spearhead, the thin end of the wedge of getting a revolution started. I mean, you know, he was the engine of the revolution in a lot of ways. He was the guy who was like really driving it forward in a kind of political way, you know. And so, I mean, he was, what he ended up doing was enormously heroic.
And just think how history would have been different if he would have had antacid.
You know, totally. I mean, it's also a really interesting question to think about, what did his kind of physical state have to do with, but that's always an interesting question about these people. I mean, like Lincoln sort of depression and stuff like that is very interesting.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, sure it is. Absolutely. I mean, I'm assuming that at this point in your career, a lot of people are bringing you scripts. And so you get to decide, yes, that's a script I'd like to work on. No, thanks. I'll pass on that one. What do you look for in a script now?
Basically, the first test of any script that I get is if I actually am compelled to keep reading it. Now, that sounds facetious, but I'm not kidding. And it's like I principally have to be interested. This sounds like a bit of a platitude, but it's not. I principally have to be interested in the story before the character or anything else. It just has to be a story that keeps me interested and keeps me turning the pages. And then it'll be the character and things like that. But I just have to find the story interesting. And that could be anything. And I enjoy all kinds of things. And sometimes I wish I got more, like, I wish I could be in a Western or something, and maybe someday I will be. But it's like, I like all different kinds of stories, and I like being a part of a story. And that gives me a big charge. You know, that's enough for me right there. Then the part will follow and stuff like that. And I like to find a variety and roles, but it's got to be an interesting story right off the bat.
Was there ever a time you showed up on a set and either a director or one of your co-actors had you starstruck?
Was starstruck by me?
No, that you were starstruck by them.
Oh, right. Because I was like, nobody's ever been starstruck by me. Oh, yes. I mean, I thought, wow, nobody's ever. Yes, I definitely have had many moments of that. I worked with Vanessa Redgrave twice.
Oh wow.
And that was pretty big stuff and pretty great. And she turned out to be an extraordinarily great person. I mean, obviously she's an amazing actor, but then she's also a wonderful person to be with and to act with, and that was great. I think she may have been and still may remain one of the people that really kind of knocked my socks off. Yeah.
Oh, outstanding. What about director-wise? You've worked with some magnificent directors over the years.
I have. And I think, you know, it's not just because I'm going to show up in Omaha soon, but I definitely would say that Alexander was one of the people that, the fact that I even got to sort of meet him and audition for the part was almost enough for me. I never thought I would get a part in him, but I actually get the part in the show. But he was a director that I'd seen Election, and I remember thinking, boy, if I could ever work with a guy like that, if I could work with that guy, that would be amazing. And so I was pretty bowled over to just even be able to meet him and shake his hand.
Can you believe it's been 15 years already since Sideways?
No, it's crazy to me that it's been 15. It's an amazing thing because for an actor to have any project that they've done, have that, this kind of life. I mean, people still respond to that movie and talk about that movie like it came out last year. You know, it's still so fresh in people's minds, that movie. It's amazing. I mean, I'm incredibly lucky to have that as a piece of work that I can look back at and say, I was actually in that thing.
Well, yeah, not only contains timeless truths, but for both you and Thomas Church to be able to tap into those universal truths that, you know, you watch it now or you watch it 15 years ago, it's still true.
No, I mean, and I think it really does do that for people. I mean, it's clearly why people are still, it hits some kind of deep nerve that so many different people can relate to.
When you decide to take a role, and how do you start breaking down a character? What's kind of the, I hate to use the word process, but it's the best one I've got at the moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a little bit of a case-by-case thing. I mean, different things will demand different things of me. I will feel a need to, you know, I mean, like we were saying with John Adams, it's like I felt some need to do some research about it. I've played parts. I played a boxing manager one time, and I felt a need to actually hang out with boxers and learn how to wrap the guy's hand the right way, even though I didn't really ever do it much in the movie. You know, sometimes I feel like that. Sometimes I don't want to do anything like that. I just feel like I have a kind of instinctual take on it, and I don't, and it's a very delicate thing. I don't want to intrude on it. The basic thing I do to start with is I read the script over and over and over and over and over again, because everything I'm going to need to know should be in the script. And so that's the basic process of it. And the other thing I want to do is I want to literally kind of digest the lines in a way that I won't be thinking about them anymore, that they'll just be a part of everything I'm doing. And so I really do believe that on a good script, everything will be there in the script. And all you really need to do is mine the script over and over again. But as I say, sometimes I do other things too, you know. I used to draw my characters. I wanted to be a cartoonist, and I still sometimes do that. And that can be very helpful and interesting and fun too with certain kinds of characters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not necessarily asking you to pick any favorites, and we kind of touched on a little bit, but are there any particular roles that you've done that you go, yeah, you know what, that was really fun, either because of great craft services or because the role itself was really something you wanted to sink your teeth into, you know?
Well, the craft service is always key on any movie. And I will tell you, on Sideways, we had superior, fantastic craft service. We had really good food. And that was, there was always good food around on that. There's a movie that it's the first thing, when anybody asks me this question, it's the first movie that leaps to mind. I did a movie probably about maybe 12 years ago called The Illusionist, which is a strange movie about a magician in Vienna at the turn of the century, 1900, the turn of the 19th and 20th century. And I had a really great time doing that movie because it was a kind of fulfillment of a lot of sort of childhood fantasies. I was a big sort of Sherlock Holmes fan when I was a kid, so the whole sort of gaslit Victorian era sort of detective thing was very appealing to me. And I got to play a detective in a kind of gaslit era world, horses and carriages, and I had a kind of pipe, and I had a fantastic overcoat, and I had a German accent, and it was like, it was every kind of fantasy I'd ever had about being an actor when I was a kid.
That's very cool.
That to me was the most fun I've ever had acting. I loved playing that part because it was everything I wanted to be, you know, when I was a little kid, this 19th century fantasy.
Absolutely. That's very cool. That is very cool.
Yeah.
Comedy or drama, which one's more difficult for you?
Well, they're both difficult for me. Everything's difficult for me. But I do think it's true that comedy is difficult on film in a way that's kind of unique, because you don't have that sense of the response from the audience and stuff like that. Comedy is a joy to do on stage. It's terrible when it bombs, but you know when it's bombing.
Yeah.
It's great, but it's very difficult on film, and I feel like the people, I'm always quite blown away by the really skillful comedians who are great actors. A great comedian is a great actor, and vice versa. But, you know, those people 150% know what's funny and know what isn't funny. And they're like fighter pilots or surgeons. They're so precise that and I don't have that level of confidence in my comic abilities or the skill. So, you know, I've been with some really skillful comedians, and it's an impressive thing. They just know that they're funny, and they know when they're funny and when they're not. And it's because on the movie thing, you're not getting the response.
Sure.
So it's an amazing thing. You know, it's very difficult.
Absolutely.
But I find all of it difficult.
That's very funny. You're very good at it. So you find yourself with a little time off, and you're flipping through the channels, and you come across a movie. Who's in the movie? Who do you like to watch work? You just go, oh, that's, yeah, I gotta stay for the rest of this.
Currently, or like currently or from the past or just whoever?
Any one of them. Any one of them.
Well, currently I'm a big Denzel Washington, so I enjoy watching him. Anything he's in, I'll watch. But from the past, it's, you know, I was a great admirer of a lot of kind of, I like a lot of old movies, and I enjoy lots of the kind of quirky character actors of the past. I'll watch anything with Peter Lorre in it.
Uh-huh.
I'll watch anything with Boris Karloff in it. I'll watch anything with Vincent Price. I'll watch anything with, but I also love Alec Guinness, and I love guys like that.
Sure.
You know, I like a lot of those old school character guys like that, or I'll watch anything with guys like that.
Yeah, Gene Hackman, I never saw him give a bad performance, right?
No, I mean, and then there's obviously those guys like that. Gene Hackman and Robert Duvall is probably my great acting hero, but it's like, you know, I mean, the guy is unbelievable. So anything with Robert Duvall, I'll watch. And those guys, it's almost taken for granted. Sure, I'll watch those guys.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
But Duvall is my favorite of all those guys.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Good guy or villain, do you have a preference?
Well, in some ways, I say to myself, have I ever really played either one of those strictly? But I have. I mean, I always feel like the good guys I play have so many flaws and bad qualities that I don't know if you could call them good guys. And then I play bad guys who are never really, although I have done a couple of, like, full-on bad guys, and those are really fun. And they're a real pleasure to do, and I enjoy playing bad guys. A good guy, like a genuinely good person, I think I've hardly ever done. And I don't really know that there's that many parts that are like that, but, I mean, flaws are interesting in a person. So I did a movie called Saving Mr. Banks, and I played a very good man in that, a very decent, sweet, optimistic, kind man. And it was very difficult, actually, to not have him seem stupid or vapid. It was kind of like, how do I play this guy and not have him seem like a dope?
Right. You know, take off the blinders!
Exactly. This guy's such a good man that I'm like, nobody's really like this. This is ridiculous. So in a way, it was actually it was a real challenge, and I loved playing the part, actually, because I don't often get asked to do something like that. But it's challenging. Goodness like that is challenging to do, you know?
Oh, sure. Now, how close to a bucket list moment was it for you to host Saturday Night Live?
Ah, that was interesting. I mean, yes and no. I love that show. I grew up seeing that show. I was bowled over. They wanted me to do it. I was excited to do it, but I was terrified to do it, too, at the same time. I was very nervous about doing it. Again, partially because of what I just said a minute ago about I don't trust my comic ability. I don't have that much faith in my comedic talents. But I was like, I'm going to go on this, and I'm going to bomb this show. This is going to be terrible. And so, but I played it smart when I did it, because at the time when I did it, Amy Poehler was on there. And I was like, if you ever watch that show, which I did in that particular episode,
yeah,
she's in every one of the skits that I chose. Because I was like, she's hilarious. She can't miss. She makes anything funny. So I'm going to pick every one of the skits I pick, she's going to be in it. Because then it will work if she's in it. And that's what I did. I was smart that way.
You could be a casting director on that. That was a great choice.
Well, she was at that point, people knew she was great. I mean, she was nearing the end of her tenure there, I think. It may have been the last or next to last year she was on that. So she was already, everybody knew how great she was. But I was like, you know, she can't miss. And so, but it was nerve-wracking. I also get very uncomfortable having to, quote-unquote, be myself in something, too. I get very nervous on talk shows. I get very nervous on things like that because, I mean, I've gotten used to it over the years now, and I'm better at it, but I get very nervous if I don't have a script, if I don't have things like that. And the skits are scripted, but the sort of idea of being the host and stuff was a little bit freaky to me. But I ended up loving it. It was a great experience. I loved it. It was great.
Oh, that's fantastic. Between the, because you also do episodic television and you've done films. Do you have a preference between the two types of work?
I definitely find TV very interesting. It's a combination of sort of stage and film, you know, and I like it because you're given, if your show lasts, you're given many opportunities to kind of try to get it right, to get the character right, you know, and if you have a good writers and stuff, the character will develop and change and do all different kinds of things. So you're constantly sort of, it's like theater in that you're getting the opportunity to work on it over and over again. But it's like movies in that, you know, the character is sort of, you know, you get the chance to shoot everything over and over again. I got that reversed, actually. It's like movies in that you get the endless chance to do retakes. And it's like theater in that you get this one character to mine over and over again. See what I mean?
Yeah, I got confused.
I got confused by my own amazing formula there.
it was everybody was staggered.
Yeah.
There's not a head in the house that's not spinning right now, believe me.
Good. Right. That's what I aim. I aim to get everybody to scratch in their head. That's me.
On Sunday, August 25th, you're going to be in town for Feature 8. It's the fundraiser for FilmStreams, and FilmStreams does a fantastic job, really, of preserving the art of showing films, of being a movie house. And do you have any concerns regarding the future of film houses?
That's interesting. I was just this past weekend in Washington State on Vashon Island in the Puget Sound, and they still have a single screen movie house there, big screen. I was amazed. I went in there, I didn't see a movie there. I just went in to look at it and to see a place that still just shows one movie on one big screen. And they do some revival stuff and, you know, they're gone. I don't think there's probably more than a handful of those anymore in the world. But definitely, I go to my local theater here in Brooklyn, and it's a haunting place because it's really just kind of half empty, and it's just creepy in some ways. And it's too bad. I definitely fear for the demise of them. I mean, they'll turn into these kind of IMAX stadium things to just show certain kind of event movies, I suppose. But there's definitely, it's becoming a thing in the past, and it's really too bad.
It is, isn't it? It is too bad.
Yeah.
Have you ever been able to work with your brother?
I have. I worked with my brother in theater several times in the past. We did some plays together. And the last play I think we did together was a play at the Manhattan Theater Club in New York about probably a while ago now, 20 years ago. He lived out in L.A. for years, and I lived in New York. So after he moved out to L.A., we didn't work together much anymore. But I would love to do more with him. We've been talking about trying to do a play again.
Outstanding.
He's really fun to act with, and he's really fun to act with on stage. He's a very funny guy, and he has a very sure comic instincts, which he's really great at deploying on stage.
Oh, that's fantastic. Paul Giamatti has been our guest today on Live and Local. He's going to be here in town on Sunday, August 25th, for the Feature 8 fundraiser at FilmStreams. You can get information and tickets at filmstreams.org. Paul, thank you so much for your generosity of time today. I do appreciate it.
Well, it was a real pleasure. It was fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you.